This is A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. This is the weekly segment called A-State Connections and Created State, making connections that count. You know, we've reached a milestone here with the podcast as we reached episode number 100. How about that? We are celebrating that achievement today. Emily Devereaux joins me right now. She is the Executive Director of Research and Technology Transfer at Arkansas State University. Emily, welcome to the Created State Podcast, the 100th episode.
I know. Can you believe we've had this friendship through 100 episodes? That is a long time, Jonathan. We're going to be friends forever.
Yes, exactly. That's right. And we want to encourage everybody, if you've not yet subscribed, do so, because we've got some exciting things that are coming up in the future we'll be telling you about here in just a little while. What's been your favorite part about the podcast as we've gone over the past 99 episodes or so, Emily?
Well, I'd say, you know, apart from my most favorite part of getting to work with you. So we love this partnership, and you just seem to make things just happen. You're a rock star. But, you know, one of my most favorite things about this podcast over our 2 years that we've been doing this now.
Right.
And time flies fast, is that we're now, they come to us, people want to be on the podcast. They're really excited to get to talk about what they're researching, their creativity, and it opens our eyes to what is really going on campus in the community, because sometimes you might not know some of those really cool things, and now people are talking about them and they want to talk about them and tell everybody their story.
You know, and that's one thing we've heard is, and what I really enjoy about this is when you talk to people and they're like, you know, I listen to the podcast, and this is what I really enjoy. I did not know that's going on at Arkansas State. And I hear that a lot.
That's awesome. Is that light bulb goes off? You know, things are really happening here in Northeast Arkansas, and it's cutting edge research and creativity, and the stories have to be told.
Exactly. So when you go back and kind of think about that, we're going to play here in just a few minutes one of the favorite episodes. Of course, we've had a lot of listeners who've been, we get a chance to see which episodes are really, really popular. We're going to play one here in a little bit. What's maybe one of your episodes that you really, really enjoy?
Oh, it's hard to choose a favorite, but, you know, the musician that, you know, the musician in me that, you know, I'm founded on music and creativity. I have to say the student composition podcasts, when you've been able to play the art, the creativity of the student, and then they interpret what that art is. That's living through a concert. You know, it's, you know, so I find it very impressive that our students, you know, are starting out at A-State, you know, in that composition and the art, and they tie their compositions from, you know, beyond just the music realm, they tie it across all the realms, because everything contributes to their music and their art. And I think that's what's so beautiful about this Created State podcast too, you know, thinking about it, is it ties everyone together. We all touch each other. Research and creativity touches much more than just the person doing it. And we all find our interest and part in that research and creativity. And I find that inspiring, how they bring us into it.
I remember when we, on this particular episode that you're talking about, Dr. Tim Crist had the student Ty Crawford and was talking about how he was able to take music that was, you know, made from sounds that he either created or sounds that were distorted, things that we may not really think of as music, things that he said is messed up, in quotes. But he was able to really make them his own. And that was really, really cool when you hear what all he did and how Dr. Tim Crist, who is an amazing instructor or professor here on campus, was able to kind of really encourage something like that. Dr. Chris, one thing I was wanting to ask you is that it seems to me with all of the music that's already been created and all of the songs that are out there, no telling how many, how do you get to a point where you think, okay, I'm going to write something that's never been written before? How can you go through that process? I mean, it sounds like it would be an enormous challenge to do that.
It does. Yeah. And you know, it's really about your uniqueness and your individuality in the world. I often say that there is no difference between the artistic experience and the human experience. And the human experience is an ongoing, changing experience. And it's uniquely our own. We all have unique experiences. And, you know, you'll hear the, you know, I think Ty here this morning will describe a lot of his own personal point of view as to, you know, how his experiences affect him as a person and therefore affect the kind of music, you know, the decision making he makes when he creates a piece of music.
So Ty, welcome to the studios. Welcome to A-State Connections. Ty Crawford is joining us here. Kind of tell us about how did your love for music start?
Okay. So my love for music actually really started, I would say probably whenever I was like 8 and my dad started showing me, you know, a bunch of his music. He listened to like Metallica and like Judas Priest and, you know, the 80s metal kind of thing. And I started listening to some of his music and started getting interested into it. And then there's this game that came out called Guitar Hero. And whenever I bought Guitar Hero, I started playing it. I played it for about a month. And then I asked my parents, I want to buy a guitar. And so my music really started then at around like 12 years old, whenever I first got my guitar.
It's a good choice.
Yeah. as far as my, like, you know, music that I create nowadays, it's been inspired by like my childhood growing up. I spent a lot of time playing like video games, you know, Game Boy Color, stuff like that. And my music is about like things that mess up is basically what my music is about. And so during my childhood, we had like this computer that would like freeze up and it would just play this like long tone. Or my Game Boy would like stutter and make these weird sounds. And I just kind of fell in love with those sounds. I was frustrated, obviously, whenever I was a kid doing all that. But now I kind of like look back at it and I just kind of get like nostalgia from all those mess ups with like this old technology and stuff like that.
So how are you able to make music out of those kinds of tones and what you say mess ups and that? Kind of explain a little bit about that, please.
Okay, so whenever we create music digitally, we're creating an audio file, and you can do a ton of things to mess up that audio file. You can splice it up and chop it up into many different pieces and then like try to put it back together, and it'll sound really wonky. There's things that you can mess with, like the buffer override, which will mess with like the latency of like the microphone or the input, which messes up like when the input signal comes in and all that stuff. There's just a ton of different things that you can do to just mess up the audio file itself and just kind of get these messed up weird tones. There's also something that you can do called circuit bending, which is where you take like maybe an old toy that makes like a sound and you can just pop it open, mess with the wiring, and you can mess with that sound however you please, because there's a synthesizer in there and you can mess with it and make it sound like completely messed up.
Yeah, You know, and another one that I would say is at the top of my favorite list was the Bird Observatory that, you know, you recorded. When you went out into the Bird Observatory and had the sounds of nature and the birds, and you brought the observatory to all of us. So that was really cool as well. You felt like you were on an expedition with them.
And that was actually one that a lot of people enjoy. We're going to play that particular episode back here in just a few minutes and be able to talk about that.
Good choice.
Exactly. Yeah. We're going to do that. And we're actually, in next week's episode, you're going to hear in this, as we play this back, Dr. Bovis, who did a really good job of being able to work with students, and then also Alex Matthews, who is a graduate student, who kind of talked about what they were doing as they were doing bird banding. They're going to actually be joining us next week to be able to kind of give us an update on bird watching during the pandemic. So that's really interesting research.
That is, you know, through the pandemic, I started following their Facebook, their lab's Facebook page, and they post a lot on birds and bird watching and the research on birds. So that's been interesting to follow through this time.
So we're going to go into that, but before we do, I have to ask you. So, you know, we've reached this 100th episode. It's hard to believe, but it's gotten here, as you say, so fast. Emily, we got 100 more to do.
Oh, not just 100, like 500. You know, sky's the limit. Let's just keep making them.
Yeah, exactly. And what are your thoughts as we start moving into the next 100 episodes? You know, we're gonna keep on doing this every Thursday. Your thoughts as we go on. We've got exciting things, some things we can't announce yet. We've got really exciting things that are coming up on the horizon.
We definitely do. We, you know, to be able to talk about what, you know, really going on and reaching others that we haven't, you know, that we haven't been to yet, the populations, and bringing new topics on board for Create at State and how they use these podcasts. You know, I think that's going to be interesting to see how we keep morphing the podcast into new ways to communicate research and creativity, you know, so at all ages.
Yeah. And we've got opportunities to be able to talk to students all over the state. Just really exciting things that are going on. And we're going to be telling you, I know we're teasing, but we're going to be telling you about some more things here as we go along. We're going to be talking to new faculty. We're going to be talking to some other people. So the sky is kind of the limit as to what we're going to be doing. Emily,
and really the sky, Jonathan, I have to interrupt. I'm sorry, but really the sky isn't the limit. I mean, let's just think universal.
Oh, you're right. The sky isn't the limit.
No.
We'll tell you about that coming up here in just a little while as to what that means. So very, very well, very nice. That was well played for sure. Emily, thank you so much for your time. Here's what we're going to do right now for the 100th episode. As Emily alluded to, we're going to go back to episode 52. This was episode 52. This was released September 12th, 2019 for the Created State podcast, as we did go over to the Arkansas State University Bird Observatory. We'll go ahead and play that episode for you right now. It's just after 6 o'clock on a Wednesday morning. Several students arrive at the location of Arkansas State University's Bird Observatory. It's located between the bridges of the Marion Barry Parkway, and this morning, students are conducting a bird banding exercise. Students have nets set up to catch birds for identification. Students look in the nets about every 30 minutes to see if they have a bird. Before the first check, I talked to Associate Professor of Ecology at Arkansas State University, Dr. Thawne Bovis. Tell us a little bit about this bird observatory. We're actually looking at birds that are kind of flying overhead right now. Kind of tell us about the bird observatory and how long this observatory has been on campus.
Sure. We started the bird observatory I think it's about 5 years ago now, right, Alex? Yeah, about 5 years ago. And when we started it, we had really four goals. And so just to tell you what a bird observatory is, a bird observatory is a place where people go to study birds, to monitor populations, to learn about birds, to get the community engaged with birds. And so really those are the kind of the main goals that we had all along. One, to have a place where we could add to our understanding of bird migration, of the health of populations that are moving from North America to South America, and add to this global database where anyone then could use the data to understand how birds are doing, to understand where they're moving from and to, and to do any sort of, ask any sort of research questions related to bird movements and bird populations. There's nothing else like this in the region. And while this is relatively a small scale operation, we do capture a decent number of birds every fall, and we keep our nets open for about 6 weeks in the fall. And so back to the overall goals. Secondly, we have a lot of students here that are in wildlife or in conservation and gaining experience handling, identifying, sexing, and aging birds is a really important skill that a lot of them will need to know. And so there's an educational component to get students experience handling and processing birds. And then third, we do have a couple active research projects that this operation adds to, in particular one involving feather mites and the coevolution between feather mites and their bird hosts, in particular warblers. And actually one of the species of feather mites that we have described, new species of feather mites that we described, was collected. They were all specimens were collected here at the A-State Bird Observatory, and they're named after Jonesboro. They are Amarodectes jonesborensis, and they are found on northern water thrush, which is a type of migratory warbler that actually doesn't breed anywhere near here, but apparently they find our banding station a nice place to stop over while they're migrating from the northern U.S. and Canada down to Central and South America. And then finally, the last goal of ours is to engage with the community. So this is open with open arms to anyone from the community that would like to come and learn about birds, see birds up close. So little kids to older people to any adults to anyone that is interested in engaging with birds and getting a chance to see them up close and learn more about them. And so those are the overall goals of this operation. And so what we have here is a bunch of nets set up in the woods and in the habitat around us. And we set those up, and right now we're just doing completely passive netting where we just let the birds fly around as they normally would. And if they happen to fly into the net, then we will go catch them and extract them from the nets and bring them over here. And then we'll process them and identify them, age them, sex them, and do a few other things. Once in a while, we'll also cheat and we'll increase our capture rate by using speakers to play back sounds that will attract individuals to the net. And so we'll use both of those strategies while we are working out here.
Is this bird banding? Is that what it is? And what specifically is that?
Yeah, so bird banding is a method of marking birds so that we can identify an individual at a later date. And so we have government, federally issued aluminum bands that we put around their legs. And those bands have specific numbers on them that are unique to that band and that band only. And so if we or someone else ever see or capture this bird again and they can read the numbers on that band, they will know exactly where that individual was captured, when it was captured, how old it was when it was captured, the health of the bird at that time, and so forth.
Right. And this is something, birding is something that has become very popular and actually something that I know that over the years really leads to tourism dollars in the state and those kinds of things. It really has been taking off over the past several years.
The economic value of birds when you incorporate bird watching into it is incredible. In the billions of dollars per year in the United States alone through direct tourism, but also through indirect things like purchase of binoculars and field equipment. There is the potential for a huge economic impact of birds. And that is, again, something that by engaging the public, potentially we could help increase in the region. And that would be awesome if we were known for our bird diversity as well as other sorts of industries that we have here.
And why is it birds? Why do you think people are so interested in birds and birding and this thing? Why do you think people are so so captivated by birds?
Well, I think there's probably a few explanations. One is pretty deep in time. We've culturally we've always had myths and legends, and many of our religions revolved around birds, and they've always played a major role in human culture. More recently, and on an everyday basis, birds are one of the most obvious of all the large animals. So, you know, people might like mammals a lot because we are mammals, but it's pretty hard to go out and watch mammals. It's pretty hard to go out and see a lot of mammals in a single day. They're secretive or they're difficult to find, whereas birds are everywhere. You walk outside and you can hear birds, you can see birds, and so they are constantly around us, and they stimulate a lot of our senses with their sound and their bright colors. And so I think those two things in particular are big parts of why people are so captivated by birds. Also, there's a ton of different species of birds. In Arkansas alone, you can see over 300 species of birds. You couldn't get anywhere close to that with mammals and reptiles, for that matter, or amphibians. And so of the vertebrates that are relatively easy to see, they are by far the most diverse. And so that is really exciting for people that want to try to see as many different living things as they possibly can.
Tell us about the students around here, if you don't mind, please, sir.
Sure. This is a mix of students that are graduate students that are in my lab and in other labs. That some of them study birds, some of them study reptiles. Let's see if there's anyone else out here right now. And then we also have a few people from the community and faculty. So we have another professor here, Dr. Virginie Roland, and we have a seminar speaker here today that's from Colorado State University, and so she's going to be giving a seminar later today. And then there's a couple people that I don't know yet that look like they are from the community that I will get to meet in a little bit. But we also have undergrads that are either biology majors or otherwise, looks like wildlife. And then we have actually a student from Carátaro who is out here that is doing study abroad this semester here in Jonesboro, but he'll go back to a state, Carátaro, to finish his degree, I think. Maybe he'll stay here forever, I don't know.
Yeah. Dr. Thon Bovis joins us here on the Created State podcast on KASU. So as we're recording this right here on a Wednesday morning, you all have chosen Wednesday and Sunday mornings to do this. Is there a certain reason why you've picked those mornings?
No, actually, no. Well, there is. It's just based on our schedules. I actually have to teach at 9, so I don't stay that late on Wednesdays, but other students who have the... So we always have to have at least a basic group that has the skill and the expertise to extract birds, set up the nets, and do all that. And those are just a few students that can do that, and myself. And so those students have Wednesday mornings available. And then for me, Sunday mornings work well on the weekend because I have free time and I'm able to come out here. So it's mostly just convenience for our schedule. A full-scale banding operation might be open 5 or 6 days a week, where they have 25 to 30 nets up. We only have 5 or 6 nets, and we're only open a couple of days a week. So we have a much smaller scale operation because this is not our main responsibility here on the campus, and we're just doing this as an additive bonus for students and for our own research projects.
Right. And what's it been like working with these students out here for this particular project?
It's been awesome. For me, it's almost a invaluable way to get students experience and to get students engaged with birds. Really, you can take students out bird watching with binoculars and they can learn how to identify birds, but when they get a bird in the hand and they get to see it up close and they get to talk about the anatomy and the physiology that we've discussed in class, it changes the way that they look at things. We get to see migration in action, more or less, where we're watching these birds on their way from, again, could be as far north as northern Canada all the way down to Central and South America. And so we're getting to experience at least a little snapshot of what these birds are going through. And so, for instance, we get to watch, and students get to watch, the process of how they put on fat for energy reserves for that migratory journey. And so we'll catch a bird one day and it has zero fat and it weighs 12 grams. And we'll catch a bird a week later, same bird, and we'll know it's the same bird based on those band combinations that I talked about. And they'll have they'll start to put on fat and they'll start to gain weight, which is all going to be burned off on that journey southward. And so this is a spot called the stopover location where these birds can fatten up, get ready for this journey, and the students get to experience that. And so I can talk about migration in class, and I can say, yeah, they do this, they put on fat, but then out here the students can actually see that in action and kind of experience it a little bit as if they were the bird.
How many birds would you normally catch possibly for identification?
In a single day or over the entire season?
Well, let's do both, maybe in a day and in a season.
So it can be really variable. And so birds are very sensitive, especially migratory birds, are very sensitive to weather conditions, in particular winds. And so if the winds are blowing in the right direction, and at this time of the year that would be blowing from the north because they are heading south, you will get large bursts of activity where birds are flying from the north and then eventually stopping over. And so a lot of it depends on what the winds were like the night before. Most of these birds are small songbirds that migrate at night. And so if the winds were good the night before, we could have a lot of activity and we could catch 20 to 30 birds. If the winds were kind of inappropriate, either blowing the wrong direction or not blowing that much at all, then we might only get a few birds in the day. And so over the whole season, we usually catch between 150 to 200 birds, somewhere around there.
The first check at 7 o'clock is not successful. No birds in the nets. In between the breaks, I talked with some students. First, I talked with graduate student Kevin Crager.
I'm a graduate student under Dr. Bovis, and I'm studying feather mites and their relationship with passerine birds. So I'm a master's student in biology.
Awesome. So tell us about this research and how long you've been doing this out here at the Bird Observatory.
So this is my second year working with him, and so I was out here last fall. We did this, and so this is my second time doing bird banding here this fall. The research doesn't necessarily apply too much to my project. I'm looking more at the ecology of the feather mite and bird interaction. We do collect feather mites from birds out here, and I do get practice, you know, looking at the birds, checking them for feather mites, doing that sort of thing. But not so much directly applying to the birds that I'm using for my project.
Right.
It's still related, though, because we are using the feather mites for various other projects, right, kind of related.
And what are the feather mites?
So they are small, what we call ectosymbiotic arthropods. So they're just like any other mite or tick, very closely related. And ectosymbiont just means that they live outside of the bird. We call them symbionts because we don't know whether they are beneficial, harmful, or kind of neutral to the bird. We're investigating that relationship in my project a little more. The feather mites are really diverse but kind of poorly studied. Like I said, we don't know the exact relationship. We're kind of looking into that. And there's a huge diversity of feather mites that we still need to explore. So they're a very cool group. They live primarily on the wing and tail flight feathers of the birds. So you don't really find them on the body of the bird, more so just the wing and the tail. And we believe they eat things like bacteria and fungi that live on the feather and a little bit of the bird's oil. Like, we have oil on our skin, birds put oil on their feathers, so we believe they consume some of that as well. Right. So,
what is it that attracts you to be able to come out here and do this every morning that y'all are able to?
Yeah, it's just exciting to, you know, you never know what you're going to catch in the net, so getting experience with the different kinds of birds, holding them, IDing them, gaining that experience for practical future research applications. So just getting used to using the field guides that we have and practicing that identification process, how to age a bird, how to tell its sex, those sorts of things. Also, it's really cool to get to engage with other students and tell them the little things that I know about birds and share that information with them and use this kind of as both practice for me and, you know, perhaps an educational opportunity for others.
Yeah. How did you come to Arkansas State?
So I had finished my undergraduate degrees at Hendricks College in Conway, and then I ended up taking a gap year, took the time to apply to graduate school. And my advisor at the time, Dr. Maureen McClung from Hendricks, she knew Dr. Bovis and recommended me to him, and I reached out to him. We got talking and decided on a project, and I decided to come here to pursue that degree because I always knew I wanted to go to graduate school. And so having that connection and that opportunity made it happen.
And how's it been working with Dr. Bovis? How has he impacted your life?
So he's been really helpful in getting me like out in the field. Like I before hadn't had much field experience. And so this last summer I had my first field season. He was super helpful with that. We had a great time. And then he organizes things like this, like bird banding, which we get to do during the year, and just provides a lot of outreach opportunities. And so it's really cool to have a mentor work so closely with that and, you know, get these opportunities for where I can act as a mentor, where I can do my own research. And so it's been pretty cool.
I also had the opportunity to talk with a PhD student, Alex Matthews.
How'd you come to Arkansas State?
I actually got my master's here in 2017 and then took 2 years off and then migrated back to Thon's lab to do more research.
Right. So tell us about, does this research help with your overall PhD project that you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm working on one of the feather mite projects where we're surveying birds that, particularly warblers, for feather mites and looking at what species of feather mites they have and if any of the birds share feather mites and kind of the coevolution between the mites and the birds.
Right. And how has Dr. Bovis been able to help you with your, you know, with your work in that regard?
He and I have done a lot of field work together, so going out and catching the birds, and so he has been very helpful in terms of understanding the ecology of the birds themselves. And then we've both kind of explored feather mites together, sort of from the ground up. We really didn't know much about them when we first started. Back in 2014 is when I started my master's. And we really didn't know anything about these feather mites. We knew a lot about the birds, but we didn't know anything about the feather mites. And so we have really developed this project together, and it's been really fun.
So you've been here from the very beginning of the bird observatory, is that right? Kinda?
Yeah, I was here before it, right as it was beginning. Yeah, a little before it started and right as it got going.
Right. And so you've kind of seen more and more people get involved and more students get involved in this. What does it mean to have this kind of observatory here at Arkansas State that not only students could, you know, observe, but the public could observe too?
Yeah, this is a really neat thing for Arkansas State to have for students and the public, because a lot of people don't even really notice birds as much. They see them, but they don't really know much about them. And being able to hold a bird in the hand is just so different than just watching a bird at your feeder or something. And looking at the feather patterns and looking at the things that live on birds, and seeing what kind of how many different species we have here on campus is pretty unique, and then it's right. I mean, it's about as close as you can get to the library and a lot of other buildings on campus. So it's really accessible for people in the public and students. And most universities don't have a piece of land like this where they can go and catch birds and learn about them.
Right. And so I know that this definitely is something that excites you. I know to be able to be, it's kind of like you're in your element, I guess, when you're out here kind of, you know, watching and looking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So what do you hope the overall goal of this will be, you know, by way of what you all are doing out here? What do you hope the overall goal is for your research and just in general?
Yeah, I mean, for my research, I like to catch as many bird species as possible and gather as much data about feather mites as I can. But more importantly, I think, is sort of the outreach that this bird observatory provides for the public and for the students. Because that's sort of what got me into birding is being able to go out and band and see these birds in the hand and look at them close up and see how beautiful they are and what they can teach us about our environment. So I think that's really important, just to kind of experience it firsthand.
How do you think that by using this particular, you know, research and other things that y'all are doing with birds, how do you think that this helps by way of Arkansas State making an impact in the community and then the knowledge of these areas? How do you think it's helping in that impact?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that it's just a really unique thing that Arkansas State has to have this banding station, because people in this area are interested in wildlife. There's a lot of parks around. There's a lot of we have the nature center in town, and this is just an additional kind of outlet for people to come and learn, which I think people are really interested in. Because when you tell people, yeah, we've got a banding station on campus, they're like, really? I had no idea, but I'd like to come out there and see it. And so I think that Arkansas State, this is kind of a gem that Arkansas State has for outreach and for research and for the community as a whole.
I'm feeling good about this next one in front of you guys.
You feeling good about this one?
Feeling positive, yeah. So this is one of these cases where we've had southerly winds, so blowing in the wrong direction in terms of birds migrating to the south. And so a lot of birds will just kind of hang out wherever they're at till the winds shift to the right direction. And unfortunately, the next few weeks looks like a lot of southerly winds. And so if there's no reason for the birds to go, they don't necessarily have to go. Eventually they will, but they will hang out for 2-3 weeks when they would have left earlier if the winds had been blowing in the correct direction. And then suddenly you'll get a shift in the northerly winds, and then you'll get these big movements of birds that you can actually identify from weather radar. If you look at weather radar the night before, you can see the birds lifting off the ground, getting ready to migrate. Jacob, have you checked them out the last few days? I would guess they're probably pretty light. Between the hurricane on the East Coast and the southerly winds on this side, in the central U.S., probably not a lot of birds leaving right now. And so they'll just wait. They'll wait for the right conditions, and then eventually they'll take off.
Yeah.
And then we'll start to get the birds passing through here that we are trying to monitor.
After a while, the second check is awesome. Successful.
We got a bird.
Students come back with a bird.
So when this happens, what's the process of what happens next?
Joe is going to remove the bird from the bag carefully. You can, it's kind of, yeah, he's
friends are wily little creatures.
They are wily, yes.
So what do we have?
Carolina Wren. And he's very flustered, or she is very flustered right now in the bag while Joe's trying to get it out. But he's going to put it in Bander's grip and remove it to try to keep it from flapping around. And
we have an ongoing competition here at the banding station.
Right.
For every bird we catch, we guess how much we think it weighs. Everyone guesses their own guess, unique guess, and whoever gets it right gets a point. And at the end of the year, whoever has the most points gets an amazing prize to be determined at a later date.
Now it's on record.
Pat on the back, an ice cream sundae, $1 million, who knows? It could be anything.
Extra credit, maybe?
Well, they're not in my, none of these people are in my class, so I don't, I'll give them extra credit, though. Oh, that's right, you're in my class. Sorry, I forget.
Different Bill. Division.
Yeah, it depends what time of year.
I feel like Bill is just here for his love of birds.
So now Joe is measuring the length of the bird's wing.
We got a brown thrasher chipping over here. If you hear that. That up on your microphone.
Mm-hmm.
That sharp chip, that's a brown thrasher, which is a big songbird that we catch a decent number of in here, so that's possible.
And 44.5.
So he's measuring the wing and the length of the wing and the length of the tail. And Jacob is filling out the banding sheet.
And why is all this important?
These are data that can be used to assess the bird's age and the bird's health, like right now, Joe is kind of blowing on its breast and looking for fat deposits. So migratory birds will stock up during at the end of the breeding season for their migration back south.
And if you notice, this bird had zero fat, which reflects exactly what Alex was saying. Migratory birds usually will put on a bunch of fat reserves for their migration. This is a non-migratory species. This is a resident species that doesn't leave. He or she could be here all year long and spend the winter here, spend the spring here, have babies here. And for that reason, typically they don't put on a lot of fat because they're just constantly using that energy for things that they're doing immediately rather than for future use.
This doesn't even, it's to be pretty.
Oh, that's not keeping time?
No.
So that doesn't use
this
the numbers?
This keeps time, but you know this, like setting
okay.
Timer.
Gotcha.
And so the Carolina wren is, the males and the females look similar. And so we have to use a book to help us identify whether it's a male or a female based on weight or wing length.
Weekends we go till it's just hot, like that.
I try to get
there. No, we just like
Sunday. And also the age of the bird. You can tell by different feather patterns. But a lot of time you have to use the book to, because it's different for different species. Some are pretty similar, but for different species the patterns are slightly different. So you have to use a guide to help you identify the age and the sex.
But I like it when it's like, all right, this is the last hot day, and I keep saying that. I think it's the last hot day. This is it.
Saying this for 3 weeks in Colorado, and it's just not happening.
And so he's holding it in Bander's grip right now, where he's got the head kind of in between his knuckles, and the wings are closed shut by the rest of his. He's kind of cupping his hand around the rest of the bird to prevent it from bumping its wings too much and straining itself.
Right. Seems like that would be kind of a hard thing to master at first, you know, trying to be able to get the right grip.
It actually comes pretty naturally. Like once you have, for smaller birds, you kind of maybe a little more scared because you're afraid of crushing them. But if you practice a couple of times, it becomes pretty natural pretty quickly.
This is exciting time, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. It is.
So after this, will they put the band on?
I think he may have already put the band on. We might have missed it.
Okay, no, that's fine.
But it's already on. Okay, yeah. Yeah, he already put the band on.
And where did he put the band on?
On the ankle of the bird, which okay. Kind of looks like its legs.
Right. What happens next?
I don't think we've weighed it yet, so we're going to put it in, we have a small scale, and we'll tear the scale and put a cup on it, or put the bird in a small cup, and then weigh the
here are the bands.
Yeah.
Here's our metal band.
So it's on its
side. Right. So it was it hard to put the band on the bird?
No, these birds are known for being particularly easy to get away and kind of sneaky, so you do have to kind of hold them in your hand a little bit more tightly than some other birds, but for the most part, it's pretty easy once you have them in the Bander's grip to really work with them.
Right.
Do you mind showing me the band?
Oh, do you mind showing her the band? So people from the community can come out and see this firsthand and take photos and share with their friends. And
who wants to guess the weight?
Oh, yeah, now we have to guess the weight.
How fat is a young bird? I'm going to say it's pretty medium to heavy. I would say
this is 16, yeah.
I'm going to say 18.1.
I'm going to say 17.5.
Yes, you say it.
17.6.
So now he's putting it in the small cup.
And you're saying 18, 17?
I said 17.5.
And
19.4.
And what is that, by way of the specific weight?
Yes, that's the mass, and it's in grams. So. I think you did.
I think I did. Hey, I got another point. That's 2 points for me. All right.
That much closer to the prize.
The unknown prize. So as you can see, like, even when I put him in there, he kind of was backing out. These birds are really, really tricky. They can get out of almost any space if you give it to them.
So he's positioning it in photographer's grip, and he's going to...
So this bird is going under doing molt. And we think that it's a young bird, so this may be its first molt. So it's actually growing in its second set of feathers. And so as you can see, it's kind of a little bit more ratty looking than it normally would be. And we see these new pins developing right here where feathers are going to emerge eventually. And these birds actually do what's known as symmetrical molt. So on their wings, they're going to molt in. If one feather is being molted on one side, the exact same feather will be being molted on the other side. And so that helps with balance and then as well as flying abilities for these little guys. So this is a really energetically expensive time for these birds because they don't migrate. So molting and the reproductive time is really when they're going to be expending their most energy. So that's why he's not looking the greatest right now, but hopefully in a few weeks or so he'll have a fresh new set of feathers to get him through the winter.
Cool.
Young bird, and it's right on the edge. Yeah. Does anyone want to hold it?
Did we stress them out enough? they're pretty hardy.
Yeah.
No.
No, vraiment. J'aime pas trop les manipuler.
Oh, here he goes.
And he just flew away.
That's what we were saying. They get away pretty easily if you don't have them in a tight enough grip.
And that episode of the Created State podcast is one of our listener favorites that aired back in September of 2019. And as part of the 100th episode of the Created State podcast, we wanted to be able to play that back for you. Next week on the Created State podcast, Dr. Thon Bovis and also Alex Williams, who you heard in that particular package, they'll be on next week to talk about bird watching in the pandemic. And so we hope you'll join us for the 101st episode of the Created State podcast. And believe me, we've got a lot of exciting interviews and things that are coming up here as we go over the next several episodes. You do not want to miss out. Subscribe today to the Created State podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, wherever you find your podcast. Subscribe, new episodes every Thursday. I'm Jonathan Reeves. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. You're listening to A-State Connections in Created State, making connections that count.